We are continuing our walk, look through the book of Matthew, and we've got to one of those passages today where I feel that it would have been too long to tack on last week's preach, but it's almost too short to do on its own, but we're going to have to do it on its own. So Matthew 17 and verse 22 is where we're at today. If you remember last week, we were looking at the whole subject around faith and how Jesus had said that if you had faith as small as a mustard seed, and we try to unpack that, and we go straight from that into these verses where Jesus foretells his death again, and then someone challenges him about the temple tax. Let's turn to Matthew 17, verse 22, and it says this: "As they were gathering in Galilee, Jesus said to them, 'The Son of Man is about to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him, and he will be raised on the third day.' And they were greatly distressed. When they came to Capernaum, the collectors of the 2 drachma tax went up to Peter and said, 'Does your teacher not pay the tax?' He said, 'Yes.' And when he came into the house, Jesus spoke to him first, saying, 'What do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of the earth take toll or tax? From their sons or from others?' And when he said, 'From others,' Jesus said to him, 'Then the sons are free. However, not to give offence to them, go to the sea and cast a hook and take the first fish that comes up, and when you open its mouth, you will find a shekel. Take that and give it to them for me and for yourself.'" We've seen, as we've been going through, particularly these last couple of weeks, that Jesus and the disciples, they were always together, and even more so the last couple of weeks as they've been in the wilderness, having some time together out of the way for the crowds. And they had seen some pretty amazing things take place in that time, both with the crowds and the transfiguration on their own. But one thing that was puzzling to them or disturbing them was the fact that Jesus kept talking about, as they were going to travel to Jerusalem, how he was going to be killed and seized and against his will. And this isn't welcome news. You know, they were just beginning to see Jesus, as we know that he had 3 years on the earth where he performed his ministry. And they were just beginning to sort of see things beginning to happen and crowds coming. And they didn't like the fact that Jesus was now saying that they were going to Jerusalem, and when he was there, he was going to be killed. But as much as they don't like that, it's the truth. And this denial that in a sense they had about what Jesus was saying was not going to deter Jesus from what he had been sent by God to do. And perhaps it's one of the reasons why Jesus keeps telling them that these are the events that are going to take place. If you remember, as I said, they've already spent this time in Caesarea Philippi, away from the crowds, having this time with Jesus. And it's sort of like they're enjoying this time, but Jesus keeps bringing them back to this fact that they are going to be going to Jerusalem, and Jesus is going to suffer at the hands of men. Matthew 16, verse 21. "From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders, chief priests, and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day rise." Matthew 17, verse 12. "But I tell you that Elijah has already come, and they did not recognize him, but did to him whatever they pleased. So also the Son of Man will certainly suffer at their hands." Now this time, when Matthew records what Jesus says, the verses that we've read, this time Jesus adds a little more detail into it. And sometimes we gloss over it, but it says this: he would be delivered into the hands of men. So previously he's just saying, this is what's going to happen. We're going to go to Jerusalem. I'm going to be tortured, killed, and then on the third day rise again. This time, Matthew adds that he says that he's going to be delivered into the hands of men. Now that word for delivered is paraidomi, and it means to hand someone over, to give them up, to give a person to somebody else. And we do know the story that Judas betrays him, but it's in a sense Jesus is now beginning to tell them some more of the details. He's saying, we're going to go to Jerusalem and I'm going to be handed over, as if he's beginning to tell the disciples that they need to be on their guard, because as we know, one of them did hand him over, one of them did turn him over to the religious authorities. He's hinting here at the betrayal, that one of them was going to do this. But the disciples, instead of focusing on that, they're just hearing the words that he's going to be killed. And that's what they focus on. And that's understandable in the circumstances. You see, as humans, and this is the disciples are there in there as humans. And it says, when we hear bad news, our emotions in that moment only allow us to hear the part of the message that perhaps is the most important to us, or the bit that strikes us as being the worst. We don't always hear all the details. We don't always see through everything that's going on. Because Jesus also told them that on the third day he would be raised. But they're not focusing on that. I mean, the good news is they're going to Jerusalem. Yeah, it's not good news he's going to be killed, but actually he's going to be raised on the third day. So it doesn't matter what happens. 3 days later, I'm going to be back, is what he's telling them. But they're not focused on that. They're just focused on the fact that he is going to be killed. And the parallel passage in Luke gives us some further details. It says this in Luke chapter 9, verses 43 to 45. And all were astonished at the majesty of God. But while they were all marvelling at everything he was doing, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let these words sink into your ears. The Son of Man is about to be delivered," there's that word again, paraidomi, "into the hands of men. But they did not understand this saying, and it was concealed from them, so they might not perceive it. And they were afraid to ask anything about this saying." Jesus doesn't expand any further on those words. He, is planting that seed. Now, I know we're not American, but I'm told that US President Benjamin Franklin once said this. He says, in this world, nothing can be said to be certain except death and taxes. And Jesus has just spoken about his death. And then right off the back of that, we are straight into Jesus being questioned about taxes. Now, taxes are the last thing they're thinking about at this point. Jesus has given them this terrible news, and they're all concerned about what's going on. As I say, they didn't know what to ask. They were afraid. They were worried. And suddenly, as is often the case, somebody outside the situation who doesn't know all the facts comes along and challenges them challenges Peter, actually, as they walk back into Capernaum. And the challenge is this business around the temple tax. Now, the temple tax is a tax that was required from all Jewish males over the age of 20. And it equates to about 2 days' pay, is what the temple tax was there for. So, in one sense, it's not majorly expensive, but in another sense, it is not easily affordable. It's not like you carry around 2 days' worth of pay in your pockets and have that money easily at hand. So that it's something, it is a tax. So it's something that perhaps people would have saved up for, would have worked towards to give this tax. I'll give you some more details in a minute. But they go to Peter and not to Jesus. Now, I think the tax collectors here, having been stirred by the authorities, are hoping that Jesus would refuse to pay this tax. And if he refused to pay this tax, then clearly they've got some grounds to accuse him of things and say things about him. But they didn't ask Jesus. And the reason I think they didn't ask Jesus was because in the past, when the religious authorities had asked Jesus, or the people had asked Jesus questions who were trying to get him or trap him, he would respond in a way that would actually make the people asking the question look silly. Jesus had this great way of turning it around. And so rather than challenging Jesus directly, they take Peter and they start to say, you know, are you going to pay this tax? They didn't say you haven't paid it. What they're saying is, are you going to pay it? It was due once a year. And what they're trying to do, I think, is they're trying to trap Jesus, but without actually confronting him directly. Now, what we don't get in the text is, because when we think of tax, right, we don't get a choice, right? We have to pay tax. But the temple tax was not an obligatory tax that you had to pay. This tax wasn't in the Roman law, and it wasn't required by the law of Moses. This tax was a voluntary tax, as if there is such a thing. But it was something that people paid. You could say it was a bit like the offering on a Sunday. People pay it for the upkeep of the church, for keeping it going and what's going on. And really, the tax was there as a person's, or it was used as a loyalty to the temple in Jerusalem. It was collected from all over Israel and then it was sent to Jerusalem. And it was sometimes used to fund things, or in the case of like Herod wanting to make it better. It was all about keeping the temple, which was the presence of God, in Jerusalem. And this wasn't really important to Jesus. I mean, he's been again and again speaking against those religious authorities and those things that are going on. But really, what Jesus is being presented here, is he going to conform to the cultural expectations of the time, or is he going to defy the social rules there? Now, it's interesting that the text tells us, Peter says that, yes, of course he'll pay the tax. Now, he doesn't even consult with Jesus. He's just said, yes, of course he's going to do this. Now, this tax, as I said, was paid annually. So it was paid once a year. And Peter probably knew that Jesus had paid the tax in the past. As I say, when he was over 20, any Jewish man over the age of 20 was required to do that. And so that's the reason why Peter probably responded so positively without hesitating. He knew that Jesus had done it in the past, and he knew that Jesus was going to do it again. But it also appears from our text that neither Peter or Jesus had the money to pay the tax at that moment. Because like I say, it's about 2 days' worth of wages. Now, Matthew tells us that Jesus was at this house in Capernaum, and it probably was Peter's house, the house you can go and visit today. And this conversation had taken place outside. Now, Jesus had either overheard this conversation taking place, and that's possible because someone might have shouted out, or he was aware of it through some sort of supernatural ability, because it's clear that Jesus is in the house and the conversation has taken place outside the house. And Peter and Jesus have this discussion. And Jesus asked Peter these questions about tax and whether kings tax their sons. And the conclusion drawn is that they will pay the tax so as not to offend those who are demanding it. That's where Jesus comes about. The question that Jesus asks is about taxation in general. And the answers are obvious. Of course kings don't tax their own children. That's not what happens, is it? It's not that the king says, I want this money, and then he doesn't ask his king's word. No, in fact, it's the king's family that benefits from the tax. And so the logical conclusion is that Jesus should not have to pay the temple tax because he is the Son of God. And that's the twist in the question. Is really, these people are coming to Jesus to say, is he going to pay the temple tax? But Jesus has already declared that he is the Messiah. So we might just read it as a simple question, but actually it's probably a question that the Pharisees and the scribes have set up, and they're trying to stir up. And Jesus is saying, well, why should I have to pay it? You know, he's not saying that, but the inference is that he is the son of the king. Why should he have to pay this tax, this temple tax? The temple is dedicated to God and is all about God. And furthermore, because the disciples are really the extended family of Jesus, the question that Jesus asks is, you know, do the sons of the king have to pay the tax? He's almost saying, and nor do you guys have to pay it either. It's not necessary to pay this tax. But it's interesting, the text tells us that they pay the tax to stop anyone taking offence. Now, Jesus is not one to avoid conflict, but what he's trying to do is he's trying here to, you know, basically sort of say this is not an unreasonable demand. The upkeep of the temple, in one sense, is a good thing. Okay, he is the Messiah, he is there as a son of God, but there are people that are good, worshipping Jews who are looking for the Messiah and perhaps don't know Jesus is coming into Jerusalem or is the Messiah at this point. And so Jesus isn't necessarily surrendering to their demands. What he's actually doing is he's giving up his personal rights for the sake of the higher priority that is the kingdom of God. See, by paying it, he shuts down any discussion on the subject. They were hoping to trap him. He just says, yeah, well, we'll pay it then. End of subject, end of argument, end of discussion at that point. And Jesus is really demonstrating to his disciples here, and I think it's relevant for us as well, that sometimes we need to pick our battles carefully. You see, there isn't anything sinful about paying this tax, or nor was it an obligatory tax. It was quite reasonable not to pay it. And Jesus, in his full wisdom, benefits the paying of the tax versus the negative impact of not paying it. He knows they're going to Jerusalem. He knows that he's going to be handed over. So why sort of stir up the anti-sentiment at that point and cause problems there? His focus is the kingdom of God and the purposes of God. And he doesn't want to create a barrier this close to it that's going to prevent him from fulfilling what needs to be carried out. Now, having paid the tax, or having decided to pay the tax, they then have this problem. Where is the money to pay this tax? As I say, it's about 2 days' wages per male. And Jesus instructs Peter to catch a fish. Now, let's remember that Peter was a fisherman. And I would imagine he's caught many, 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 many fish in his life. And not once has he ever caught a fish where there's been a coin in its mouth. I imagine it's very surprising. But actually, on this occasion, Jesus tells him, go and cast a hook. So not a net, just a hook. Catch one fish. And when you catch that fish, there will be a coin in its mouth, and pay that coin. Now, that coin's value was actually a shekel, so it was Peter's tax and Jesus's tax. It wasn't just Jesus saying, well, I've covered my bases, mate, you can sort yourself out. No, he's done it for both of them. And he catches this fish. And again, let's not go over the miracle that's here. Can you imagine? Jesus has said to them already 3 occasions, I'm going to Jerusalem to die, and on the third day I will be raised. He's done many miracles before them. Peter's the one that got all excited and then said to Jesus, oh, well, that's not going to happen. And Jesus had this dialogue with him. And it's almost like Jesus is now going, see, I'm still God. I can still do those miracles, and I am going to be risen from the dead. It is going to happen, Peter. Now, it's interesting that one Bible commentator I read said this: the reason Jesus paid the tax in this way, because if you remember, Judas was the treasurer, the one who kept the money, the one who looked up. But they said the reason why he paid the tax in this way is so that they could take the money from funds and sources completely separate to that had been given to the ministry. Isn't that interesting? Because what he was saying was, is that, you know, you've got all these people donating money, which is what Jesus was, Judas was doing. He was collecting it, and we'll get onto that when we get to the woman with the alabaster jar. But he's collecting the money and looking after it, and rather than saying, oh, well, we'll pay that out of that, you know, he's saying, no, we will do it. And what's interesting is that he pays the tax through Peter's profession. Because that's exactly what Peter would have done had he never encountered Jesus. He was a fisherman, he would have got his money. And so in a way, what's happening here is that Jesus is paying the tax through a source of funds so he cannot be accused of misappropriating funds that have been given for the ministry. And it's also worth noting that the catching the fish seems to have been a very easy process. Jesus, go and catch a fish. Peter puts a hook on this line, chucks it in, fish comes out. Oh, look, there's a coin. Later on when we read about them fishing, or when we have read about them fishing, and they've been there with nets and they've caught nothing. This seems to be an easy process for Jesus and Peter. And so, as I say, it's quite short this morning, but in conclusion, the disciples were troubled because they were focused on the suffering that Jesus had spoken about, but they missed the promise that had been spoken of, the promise that Jesus was going to rise again. They'd heard the word death, but they hadn't heard the word resurrection. They hadn't heard that this was going to happen. And so often we do the same. We often fix our eyes on the difficulty that's in front of us, and we forget that God has declared victory. Now Jesus knew exactly what lay ahead. He knew that he was going to suffer. He knew that he was going to be betrayed by one of them. He even knew that it would be Judas that would betray him. And even in the shadow of all of that and all that's going on, he continues to teach, to guide, and to lead his disciples, and to demonstrate what it means to live in and for the kingdom. When it comes to the tax, Jesus showed that he is indeed the Son, the one who has every right indeed to be exempt from paying any of these taxes. And yet he chooses to have this humility over entitlement. He chose peace over conflict. Now that's not to say that happened every time, but in this instance that's what happened. He gives up his rights, not because he has to, but because he knows that by doing this it's going to allow a greater purpose to happen. And that's the example for us. We are called to trust God in our own lives, even when we don't fully understand his plan for what's going on. We are called to keep the message of the kingdom first and not to be distracted by these lesser issues. And let's face it, people will throw up lesser issues quite often at us, particularly when we start talking about Jesus. You start witnessing, you'll get things like dinosaurs, or UFOs is the latest thing, isn't it, and all the rest of it. It will be something that is, but Jesus doesn't get distracted by any of that. He says that he shows this thing about walking in humility, and sometimes it's right to lay down our rights so that the gospel does not get hindered. And it's also worth remembering that Jesus provided exactly what was needed for Peter in that moment. And he will provide for us too. At times it might be through ways we don't expect and ways we haven't anticipated. But he will provide for us. And it will be in line with his will. And finally, we need to remember that the very Jesus who spoke of his death is the very Jesus who rose again. And that changes everything, because his promises aren't empty. His promises are always fulfilled. And we have that promise of eternity with him. No matter what happens here on the earth, we have the promise that we will spend eternity with him. Amen.